Hi, I'm Notre Dame safety Kyle Hamilton, and you're listening to Single High, a Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com, the official home of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club.
Back to throw, Meyer. Looks, rolls to the right. Pump fake, throws the ball. It is caught, Reggie Brooks! Reggie Brooks got it!
Downfield, and Hamilton again, coming over from that safety position and making the interception.
DB's on the field, the Sherron Jones throws.
To go almost 20 yards.
Ishmael down around the 5-yard line. The kick will come down and Ragib will take it. Takes it at the 12, 15, 20, 25. He's at the 30. Afterburners are on. He's gone.
That is the All-American Kyle Hamilton. His sixth career interception.
40, 45, 50. Down the sideline. At the 35. Or right to the goal line. At the 10. The 5. A touchdown.
Here are your hosts, Frank Vitovich and Greg Flamon.
Welcome back to another edition of Single High, the Notre Dame football podcast from UHND.com. Coming to you of game week, kickoff week zero, 2023 college football season, days away from Notre Dame and Navy kicking off in Dublin, Ireland. I am one of your hosts, Frank Vitovich, joined as always by my co-host, the president of the Kyle Hamilton Fan Club and video analyst at Irish Sports Daily, Mr. Greg Flamong. Greg, how we doing? How excited are you? Scale of 1 to 10 right now for college football being back in a few days.
Scale of 1 to 10, I am Kyle Hamilton levels of excited. For the season to get started.
All right. So you're going to go to 14.
It's such, I love it. Like, it's the best. It's the reason why, both of us, like, why we do this. It's like we can talk about the games, like talking about the team during the off season is I enjoy it, but it's my least favorite because it's like I'm not dealing with anything that I feel like I can help out people with.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I think a lot of people kind of follow me and they've told me this, like, you know, Greg, you helped me understand the game, great, like, I'm glad, right? Like, if people feel like I'm helpful in that regard, good stuff. But like in the off season, everyone's dealing with the same information now. You know, I think that I do, you know, because I work with Jamie and I work with Matt and all those guys, like, we do have a little bit more access to information, sure. And that helps people, but really we're all just kind of sitting around prognosticating about things, which is a good time, right? And people like to do that, and I like to do that as well. But now we get into games, so we can actually, like, see it, talk about it, analyze it. I this is where I feel like my strengths are kind of heightened, which makes it all very fun. So, very excited.
It is, like, the best time of year. Like, early September into October, it's like the convergence of so many great sports things all at once. You have college football kicking off. You have the NFL kicking off shortly after if you're a professional football fan. You have pennant races in Major League Baseball and playoff baseball, like, all within a few weeks of each other. And it is just it's a glorious time of year. The weather's changes. It starts to get cool. You know, if you're like me and you own about a billion hoodies, you finally get to wear them again after not getting to wear them all summer long.
Yeah.
It's just a great, great time. I mean, it's also probably, like, if you think of it, it's probably the time of year when husbands get in trouble the most, because it's like there's so many distractions. There's so many sporting events going on. Whereas, like, spring and summer, it's like, you know, like, even if you're a big baseball fan, right? It's 162 games. Like, you're not using a lot of home capital to be like, I need to watch this Tuesday night, 7 o'clock, you know, Phillies Giants game or whatever it is, like, you know, whoever your teams are. But it's like, football season, it's like, well, you know what? The Eagles are on Thursday. Notre Dame's on Sunday. Phillies are in a playoff game on Sunday. And it's like, that's a lot of days of the week. So, but it is great. It is glorious. I'm going to kick off, you know, the show here with something I didn't do last time. I debated not doing it this time because if you can't tell, my voice is a little froggy. I'm coming back from having a cold, but it's the first week of the season. I could not start with a beer. So I'm drinking an IPA from Treehouse Brewery, which if you follow me on Twitter, you saw the picture I posted about a month ago with like five cases of glorious, glorious beer that a friend of mine and I brought back from Treehouse in Massachusetts. It's just, speaking of the best, it's the best beer in the world, hands down. So I'm going to start with this. It's so good. They don't miss. I mean, they are 10 out of 10 every time. Anyway, this one's called Days. It's an American IPA coming in at 6.9%. Just delightful. And that's, you know, I wasn't going to because I wasn't feeling good. But, you know, people tell you they follow you. You said, you know, because you help them understand the game. I actually do get messages about people, you know, talking about my beer takes on the single high podcast. So we all have our roles here. Greg talks to you all about football. I try to provide some entertainment factor and I drink some beers. So knowing your role.
Are there any beer pods?
There are. Here's my thing about beer, though, and like beer pod, like all that. Yeah. Like I actually saw a great quote from Anthony Bourdain, the late Anthony Bourdain. Yeah. Where he was like, look, I like beer, but like, I just, you know, want a cold, refreshing beer. I don't want to sit around and talk about it. Like, yeah. So his whole take on beer was like, he just drank like real basic, like shitty beer. Cause he's like, I just want something cold and refreshing, and said like, hey, you give me a great beer, I'll drink it. I'll drink it. I'll be able to, understand that it's a good tasting beer and I'll enjoy it for what it is, but I'm not going to sit there and talk about, you know, the different hops and shit that are in it. And I'm somewhat the same way. Like I love beer. I love to drink it, but like I am in no way possible able to sit here and be like, you know what? The Citra hops in this one have been, you know, dry hop just enough to do. That is not in my wheelhouse. But I know when I open one and I taste it, if I like it, and that's kind of where I am with beer in general. But you know what? We're days away from the start of the college football season. Notre Dame Navy in Dublin is about to, like I said, just kick off 2:30 Saturday afternoon. And obviously we're going to talk about the game quite a bit. But we haven't spoken in a few weeks. We haven't, you know, potted here in a few weeks. And I figured maybe we start with some, you know, kind of fall camp wrap up type stuff of just like, you know, culmination of what we think from fall camp before getting into the game. And I happened to see something this morning that you all published on Irish Sports Daily for the 2023 Notre Dame preseason superlatives. So Matt, Greg, and Jamie all went through things like offensive MVP, defensive MVP, so on and so forth. It's a premium article, so we are not going to mention, you know, much of it at all. If you want to read the whole thing, you should sign up at ISD, which you probably should in general because it's the best Notre Dame pay site, that there is, for the diehard Notre Dame fan. But one thing that stood out to me that I saw that I did want to get your take on, because it piqued my interest, was that when it came to defensive MVP, you listed JD Bertrand, which is interesting given Notre Dame's got an All-American corner as an option. And again, not going to talk about what the other guys at ISD listed as their MVPs, but y'all had a different MVP too, which I also thought was kind of interesting. But I am intrigued as to what made you select Bertrand as your defensive MVP for the 2023 season.
I just think he's going to play a bunch of snaps for one, and being that he's in the middle, I think that he's going to be involved a lot. So, like, the other person I considered was Ben Morrison.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have to be involved, right? And so I just think that because teams can just ignore him or they can throw away from him or whatever, like, he can go – he could have, like, a really good year and have, like, 30 tackles, like, mm-hmm. some passes broken up.
Sure.
Like maybe 2-3 interceptions, right? But like, the year that he's like, the quality of play is really high. I think that the likelihood of Bertrand having like 100 plus tackles, 10 plus tackles for loss, is pretty high.
Okay.
And, you know, you add in a couple sacks, maybe you add in a couple of turnovers forced, or you recover a fumble, maybe get the random interception. And it's just like the accumulation of numbers, I think, will kind of lead to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think he's good. You know, it's probably his last year. And I think that, you know, his main backup is Drake Bowen. And while I think Drake Bowen's going to play, I think he's going to play a good bit. I don't think that they're itching to get him out of the game. You know what I mean? Like, they're not right. itching to get J.D. Bertrand out there. He's a captain on defense. He's going to play a bunch. So it's mostly that. Mm-hmm. It's not that I think that he's going to be maybe, quote unquote, the best player on defense, but just from a number accumulation standpoint, that's kind of how I looked at it.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. That's fair. You know, it's obviously, you know, kind of fair take. And the reason it piqued my curiosity is because of the few pods that we were able to squeeze in here in the off season. I talked a lot about linebackers in general. I mentioned them last year, you know, during the season as a group that I thought Notre Dame did not get enough out of, you know, last year. And even if you look at Bertrand's stats from 21 to 22, you know, dropping down from 101 tackles in 21 down to 82. You know, tackles in 22. Now his tackles for loss went up, his sacks went up, and he actually had more, you know, passes defended. Hasn't recorded an interception yet on his career, but, you know, some of his more disruptive plays or havoc plays were up versus his, you know, just overall production, you know, was down. And that's a group in general that I think if you were to talk to a lot of Notre Dame fans, you know, just like throughout the offseason and even throughout fall camp, if there's one position group on defense that I think gives people some pause, it's probably the linebackers.
Yeah.
I mean, safeties as well, but it's like the corners are so good in this team, or like should be so good on this team, that like that should help mask some of that, you know, in terms of how creative they get with the coverages. But it's like linebacker is one, because people remember last year, like, you know, Maris Leofau was not super effective in the role that they had for him, or that they deployed him in, at least versus what maybe, you know, folks were expecting. Bertrand's production fell down. Kaiser's production fell down a little bit. So it stood out to me that you did pick a linebacker. And I guess overall, coming out of fall camp, what's your feel of that position group specifically?
The linebackers?
Yeah, the linebackers.
Oh, okay. I think they're going to be like a strong unit.
Okay.
I think that so much of last year was it being new. I think, you know, Marist, he just hadn't had a ton of snaps, you know. He didn't play in 2021 because of his leg. I think it took him a long time to get back from that. I think they just weren't comfortable on a game-to-game basis with what they were supposed to be doing. And the roles were a little bit undefined. Wow. Also, specifically for someone like Jack Kaiser, right? Mm-hmm. So I think those guys, like, I think we are going to view them in a positive way. And as for the position itself, I think those guys are – they're good. I mean, especially behind them, right? So Jaden Osbury and Drake Bowen, like those guys, like those two are going to be 3-year starters for Notre Dame. Like, they will start at Notre Dame next year, both of them. And they will be starters for as long as they are healthy and at the university.
Yep.
So, you know, there's that piece. I think Preston Zinter, I think he's another good option as mm-hmm. well. And then you factor in Jalen Snead, like, whatever. Ooh. I don't know what kind of position that he has. Like, he might be listed on the depth chart, but, like, I think that his role is going to be specialized. So we'll see how that kind of matriculates, and, like, if he's going to be a will. Like, he's listed at will, but will he be, like, rushing the passer a lot more? So that's going to be kind of an open question. So I think the position itself is in a very healthy place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it matters that they are – like, I think the fact that there are three seniors there, I think that's a value add for the defense as a whole, because you do have, you know, a little bit of inexperience up front which helps. Like, which yeah. helps that having those guys be a little bit more senior and a little bit, you know, they've been through it. So I think it's good. I honestly don't see it as like this glaring weakness that other people do, mm-hmm. but you know.
Well, and you know, Freeman wasn't, you know, let's see, he didn't exert a whole bunch of caution about Snead on Monday either. Whenever he spoke to the media, he was like, he's going to play, you know, and it was he was very clear that they do have a role in mind for Snead. And I think to your point, we're going to see what that role is and how they deploy him. But I mean, it sounded like we're going to see, you know, quite a bit of, you know, of him, you know, this year. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch how they do deploy him. Cause I think that's something that Notre Dame has not necessarily been great at, you know, maybe over the last few years, is like when you have someone like Snead on defense where you're like, he's just too athletic, too talented. Like, yeah, maybe he's still raw in areas. You got to find a way to get him on the field. They've kind of like, take somebody like Jordan Vitello. Like, it looked like they were going to kind of do that with him, you know, early on in his career. He's, you know, he's on special teams and making plays in his first collegiate game. And then it's like, you know, however many games went by where we're just like, wait a minute, where'd he go? You know, and then you didn't see him a lot, you know, then, you know, in 21 either until, you know, kind of end of the season. And it's like last year, you know, he played a little bit at the beginning of the season and then we didn't hear from him for, you know, for a while. And it's like they've had trouble when they have somebody who they're like, they just try to create a specialized role for and kind of deploy. So I'm interested to see what they do with, you know, with Snead moving forward. Cause yeah, Freeman didn't really mince words. He said he's going to play and we're going to see him quite a bit. So that's exciting. Cause to your point, the young linebackers are, whew, you know, obviously we're days away from the 2023 season, but just thinking about what that group is going to be in the future is really exciting. But let's bring it back to 2023. You know, like I said, Navy game coming up. You know, before getting into that and all the fun stuff that comes with playing, you know, playing Navy. Anything else, you know, from fall camp that kind of stuck out to you? There's one other actual area I think it's probably worth bringing up too before we get into, you know, the game itself, and that's Mr. Sam Hartman's NIL deals. But let's table that for a second and chat through, you know, anything else, you know, that stood out from fall camp, positively or negatively for you.
What stood out? Well, the defense is like the speed of it. Jamie's talked a lot about the speed of the defense, and I think that's like a huge part of like any good defense, any good team, but any good defense, like you need to be able to run because there's so many teams that are utilizing the full width of the field and they're using all the space available to them. And so the defense needs to be able and ready to defend all of that space. And I think that's been a weakness for Notre Dame in the past. And it seems like that's not going to be as, you know, as much of a weakness this year. It could even be a strength. Mm-hmm. So I think that matters. I think the quality, like, there's a lot of people who are worried about, I think, just the pass rush because there's nothing proven there, right? Like, you know, Jordan Vitello, people are so excited about him. But so I think people see, like, Jordan Vitello, and they see – it's like he's been a good player. Like, he had a good bowl game, right? His numbers are, you know, the analytics and all that stuff, like his pressure rate, pressures per snap and all those other things. Like, those are good. Right. And so you see that, but it's like, is he going to be like the guy to replace Isaiah Foskey, who set the all time record for sacks in a career at Notre Dame? And so that's kind of tough. But I think that when you look at the bodies that they have, you look at Jordan Vitello and you look at what they can do with Jalen Snead and someone else who I kind of put it just based on what Jamie's been telling me in the way that he was listed on the depth chart, I think Josh Burnham could be like a sneaky, really good player for Notre Dame this year. Like, he could be like a breakout, like, where did this guy come from? And so I think that also is a big thing with, you know, kind of what I'm taking away from this. Another part is I think Notre Dame is really strong at the positions that it's very good to be strong at, which is quarterback, obviously. Corner is another one, and then pass rush. Like, you look at all the positions in the NFL that are taken high. Those are the positions, right? Like, yeah. rush the passer, cover receivers, and play quarterback. There's another position that I think is kind of a question mark, in which, you know, I think we would love a little bit more clarity, but I think that could come, and that's wide receiver. We'll get to that. But that's another one where, like if, when I think about this camp and what it sounds like, it looks like those guys, Notre Dame is good at the positions you want to be. And then I think the other one is just like the running backs appear to be not just Audric Estime. Like, it's actually it's a stable of guys. And so that's obviously a very good thing.
Agree. Yeah. I mean, well, the fact that Chris Dyree permanently moved to receiver, I think they should have given everybody a hint back in spring already. Like, the coaching staff at least thought they had a stable of guys. Because, you know, whether or not – I think we all – you know, there was always debate as to whether or not, you know, Tyree's best position was, you know, full time, you know, at running back, given, you know, given his stature and, but, you know, also his speed. But if they didn't think they had enough dudes at running back behind Estime, you know, especially after losing Diggs in the transfer portal, you know, Tyree probably is not your starting slot receiver right now. At least, you know, full time, maybe he would have been a part time, you know, receiver, part time, you know, running back a la, you know, Theo Riddick that one season. But yeah, you mentioned receiver. Yeah, I think that is – I did a podcast with the Irish NFL show earlier this week. I forget which day it was. But and that was kind of – the thing that I said is probably the biggest, you know, cause of pause for all Notre Dame fans. It's like, what exactly do we have at the wide receiver position? A lot of talent, you know, a lot of potential. But, you know, how quickly they all develop, I think – you know, determines whether or not this is a 10-2, you know, 9-3 type season or something much better. So where do you think coming out of fall camp, you know, Notre Dame is at that position?
I missed that. What position?
Wide receiver.
Wide receiver. Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought. So I think that when you look at the type of players they are, like, that is good, right? So you have Jaden Thomas, who's like stout, strong, right? Tough to move off the ball. Has been good with contested catches, right? So if he's your boundary, right? Like, that's a prototypical type boundary. You have Chris Tyree, who's like the slot guy, shifty, long speed, fast. Obviously, doesn't have the experience, right? So there are things, nuances to the position we don't know he can do. But just in terms of prototype, like, that's good. And then you have Tobias, who's like the long striding, dynamic, deep ball, good size, right? Like, that good route runner, like that on the outside to stretch the defense vertically that way, utilizing the field. Like, you look at that and you think, okay, those are good pieces. And then you have Jaden Greathouse, who's the freshman. He's good in the slot. You have Rico Flores, who can back up Tobias Merriweather. And then you have Deion Colsey, who's been on the boundary before, who's made plays. He had 9 third down catches last year. I believe he was like 9 of 10 on targets. He had a contested catch against USC for a touchdown last year. So you look at the bodies and the types of players and you think, okay, like, this is good. Like, Notre Dame can, that's a good group. But there's questions. Tobias has one career catch.
Correct.
Jaden Thomas has, you know, the most, but it's not like a ton. Especially if it's like, oh, you're our boundary now. Like, you're our number one. Chris Tyree has never played wide receiver. So there's that. He does have a good amount of, like, out of the backfield stuff, right? Yep. They've utilized him out of the backfield. He's been solid there, so that's good evidence. Colsey is, you know, it was 9 catches, not 29, you know?
Right.
So that's another thing. And then their freshmen. You literally never see them in a real football game. So that's where it is. What is this level going to be, right? They have the pieces. How do they fit into, like, we're actually going to be a good explosive passing offense? That remains to be seen. And that's the thing where it's just – it hangs over everything, kind of. It really does. So,
one we know working in their favor is, you know, a potentially elite quarterback, you know, Sam Hartman. Sure. I think if Notre Dame did not go out and get Hartman, and Notre Dame's options right now at quarterback were Drew Pine, who just lost the starting quarterback, you know, battle at Arizona State, and Tyler Buchner, who reports are is running third in the race at, you know, the quarterback race at Alabama. I think you're much more concerned about the receivers hitting their potential because, you know, it takes two to tango. And, you know, having somebody like Hartman who's going to give them opportunities to make plays versus needing them to kind of bail them out, which I feel like a lot of times if you don't have elite quarterback play, you know, you're hoping your elite wide receivers or your, you know, your very good wide receivers are going to bail them out with great plays. In this case, it's somewhat the reverse where, you know, you're going to have an experienced, you know, very, very good quarterback who's going to be able to hopefully, you know, accelerate their development by giving them opportunities to, you know, to make plays. So I think that is like when I look at it, all of the things you said about why there's reason for concern about that position are totally 100%, you know, valid. Obviously, it's more. I think the reason I'm not as concerned is because I think Hartman is going to be an elite facilitator. You know, he showed that at Wake Forest. I think he's going to show it at Notre Dame where he's going to get the ball around. He's not going to, you know, lock in on one read every time and force the ball like we've seen at times when you have like a security blanket like Michael Mayer, for instance. I don't think we're going to see that. I think you're going to see, you know, Hartman spread the ball around. And that's why I think one of the toughest bets in the Navy game is like the first touchdown scorer for Notre Dame. I think it'd be like probably one of eight guys. And I'd be like, okay, that makes sense. Right. It's not like last year where when we did those pods where we had all of the who scores the first touchdown, you know, type props. And it was like Mayer, you know, everyone.
Yeah.
Or the year before where it was like Kyron. I don't know. Maybe the year before you might have said that Kyle Hamilton was going to score the first touchdown in hopes that he'd get in at receiver. But like it could be anybody, right? It could even at the tight end position. It's like, yeah, you know, if it was Stays or Mitchell Evans, I'd be like, yeah, I could see that. You know, it could be like one of five receivers. It could be one of like three running backs. You know, at least from receiving perspective, I think rushing touchdown wise, you know, the smart money would be on Estime getting the first rushing touchdown. Caveat, maybe, you know, Hartman on a design run or keeper, but like, I don't think another running back is going to get. The only way another running back gets the first crack at the end zone this year is if they bust one from far out, or if Estime just busted one from far out and he falls down at like the 2 or 3 yard line and just needs, you know, some oxygen. But receiving touchdown, like it could be, like I said, like one of eight or nine guys, because I think, you know, Hartman's just going to go to who's open. So speaking of Hartman, some interesting NIL developments over the last week, Greg.
Yeah.
Notre Dame, big NIL school is what I've learned in the last the last week or so. So recruits, you know, if you want NIL deals, it's clear you just got to go to Notre Dame because Sam Hartman is passing out free shoes to his teammates. He's passing out free Beats by Dre headphones to his teammates from his NIL deals. Are you surprised at all with how public? Because like Notre Dame is pushing these, which I think is extremely smart, by the way. But are you surprised at all that Notre Dame is like really leaning in and pushing videos on their, you know, the Watch ND YouTube channel showing Hartman giving out the free shoes and giving out the headphones?
I'm not surprised. I mean, first of all, the Under Armour thing, like, annoys me.
I knew that would.
Well, like, congratulations on the shoe company giving the team shoes.
Yes.
Okay. Like, to me, that is like fake hustle.
And I don't think it's fake hustle. You know what I think it is?
I think it's what?
It's Notre Dame wanting everyone to know that Hartman had an NIL deal with Under Armour.
So, but I'll tell you why it's totally different than Beats, right? Because Under Armour is a partner for Notre Dame. It shouldn't be, oh, Sam Hartman got NIL from Under Armour. It should be everybody.
Yeah, all right.
It should be everyone. They should all. So that's why to me it's fake hustle.
Yeah.
It's like, don't tell me you hooked up the team through Sam Hartman with shoes. Like, you're the apparel company. You should give them stuff anyway. So that's that. The Beats thing is completely different. And they should, like, Notre Dame, I'm not surprised, because Notre Dame is the school that is like, we're gonna do it the right way. This is what NIL is.
Yeah.
Like, it is, hey, Beats is a company unaffiliated with the university that sells, you know, there's a lot of competitors, right? There's Bose, there's JPL or JBL, which
JBL.
JBL. So there's they have competitors, right? And so it's like, hey, Beats is gonna sponsor and make Sam Hartman a spokesman for them, right? Cool. Like, that's great. You know, that's an outside company doing that, right? Same with Rollback with Audric Estime, which they did with Michael Mayer, and they did that with Kyle Hamilton as well. Sure. So they've dipped into that, and that's meaningful. You know, that's a big deal to me. Yep. And Notre Dame is right, because, like, hey, that's what NIL is. This is how you make money through being a Notre Dame football player, the Notre Dame brand, right? They give them gold. Like, they make custom gold
Beats
headphones. Like, that's awesome. That's great stuff, right? So I applaud them for that. I applaud Notre Dame for that. I applaud Beats for that. The Under Armour thing, like, come on.
What else could Under Armour have given?
If there was an announcement that, like, the whole team was an NIL, like, signed to an NIL deal with Under Armour, or like,
someone tells me that's a great area without looking up the rules.
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying, like, right? They need to do.
I agree. It would be great if they could, but something tells me that's probably a gray area. If Under Armour just came out and was like, hey, as part of our agreement, we're going to give every note. That seems probably like a little bit of a, maybe a not so.
Why is it different for Mission Barbecue to give an NIL deal to the entire offensive line?
Because it's not the whole team, and they are not
connected
to Notre Dame. You know what I mean?
But then why is it different? Why is it different for then? Why is it different for Sam Hartman then?
Because, you know, it's one player.
Why does that matter? They're contractually obligated.
True. Well, because it's not then contingent on, like, you know, every single player for the sake of being an Notre Dame football player. Okay. So, well, I guess the point being is, like, it's a way for now every recruit to know, like, specifically quarterbacks, like, oh, if I'm the starter, then there's probably going to be some money from Under Armour for me. There's probably going to be money from Beats or, you know, whoever else.
There's definitely going to be money. That's for sure.
That's big. Cause right. Yeah. Like, up until now, almost every other Notre Dame NIL story, to your point, was like, you know, Mission Barbecue or whoever, these smaller companies, even Kyle Hamilton, who did very well with NIL, like, most of the brand, like, I don't remember at least any brands as big as, like, Beats coming out and there being any sort of, like, at least public knowledge of any deals, you know, or, like, you know, publicity around them. So most of the news and the commentary we've heard about Notre Dame and NIL is Notre Dame's falling behind. Notre Dame's losing all these recruits to NIL. And it's like, okay, here we go. Now, that's something that Notre Dame could point to, right? That's something that Marcus Freeman could be in the living room of a elite high school quarterback and say, look, people are throwing money around. I know that, but look at our starter last year. Sam Hartman, here he is, Santa Claus, Santa Hartman, you know, handing out shoes and headphones because of all the deals he got because of, you know, what, you know, the recognition and the platform that Notre Dame gave him. So I think it's awesome. And I know there's probably fans who are like, bah humbug. Like, NIL is the skirt or the, you know, going to ruin college football. Like, guess what? NIL is not going anywhere. So Notre Dame could either embrace it like they are like this, or they could fall behind. And I thought it was great. I was surprised in it just because we hadn't seen it yet, where Notre Dame really publicized, you know, something like this. And it wouldn't have surprised me if, given Notre Dame's stance on some of these things, they would have, like, you know, let the players announce it, but not like really amplified it. So good on Notre Dame, you know, for putting that out there. Cause if you want Notre Dame to win a national championship, like, NIL is going to have to be, you know, something that is not a disadvantage for Notre Dame, right? It doesn't need to be where, you know, like other schools where it is like the one and only thing that they're pitching, right? But it does need to not be a disadvantage to Notre Dame, and things like that are going to make it not a disadvantage. So I was pretty happy when I saw that. I was like, okay, this is.
I mean, it doesn't hurt. I will say that.
No, and I mean, is Notre Dame going to get somebody, you know, a 5-star D-end that maybe they would have lost in the past because Sam Hartman got a deal with Beats by Dre and give him out? No. But it's something that, again, that Freeman and his staff can be like, you know, schools are telling you you're not going to get NIL money at Notre Dame. Well, look at this.
Well, so, I mean, on that front, like, maybe not the recruit situation, but it might entice another transfer, which is probably a bigger deal.
Also true. Also true. Although at some point, Notre Dame does need to recruit a quarterback that they develop. I would like to see that at some point.
It would be nice.
Wouldn't it? You know, and there's enough between, you know, Minchie and CJ Carr coming in next year. One of those two has to hit. Or Angeli, right? I mean, there were.
Yeah, Angeli could hit.
It didn't get talked about a ton, right? Because there were so many other positions to look at. But, like, there were some reports that, like, oh, this Angeli kid, right? He's not just, you know, a warm body here taking up a spot on the depth chart until CJ Carr comes in or until Minchie's ready. So that was another, I think, you know, promising development of fall camp, was that it looks like, you know, he's got some talent. So that was good to hear as well. For the sake of time, I think we should pivot to the game at hand, and then answer some questions. Cause, you know, shockingly, I remembered yesterday that we were going to record and actually posted to ask for questions. It's a novel concept, but I did remember this time. So let's talk about the game for a little bit, and then we can go into questions. So let's start here. The Notre Dame Navy game is the most annoying game of the season, like every year. We all know this. I don't even want to get into the, like, should Notre Dame stop it and or whatever, you know, banter that goes on, because we know they're not. This is Notre Dame Navy is here. You know, it's going to be.
I mean, they're definitely playing this week.
Right, so. right. But I just mean in general. Like, this series is not going anywhere, right? I mean, maybe, you know, there's more and more major realignment. Maybe it's a casualty at some point. But, like, just like Independence, Notre Dame's going to hold on to this series, whether, you know, certain fans like it or not. So we won't even talk about that. But it is annoying as hell, because the option is not fun to watch your team have to defend. It's not fun to watch when the fullback goes right up the middle because somebody missed an assignment for 15 yards and, you know, things like that. One question I have for you, and I got asked this on this Irish NFL show podcast that I was on this week. And by the way, that will air Saturday morning, so I'll post it on UHND and on our social channels when it's available. But, and the question was, how do you think it, facing it week one or week zero, whatever, first game of the year is versus facing it middle of the season? Because I had a definite take on it. I want to see, you know, how your thoughts align with it.
It's definitely better.
That's what I thought. Or that's my feeling.
It's like, I mean, Marcus Freeman said 100% better. I would tend to agree with that. Because Navy doesn't have their own, like, they haven't figured things out themselves.
Yeah, timing.
I think when you have, like, they have two quarterbacks right now, which means they don't know exactly what they are or what they want to be, you know? Like, the best Navy teams are always when they have an incumbent quarterback.
Yep.
Right. There's a quarterback who that like Keenan Reynolds, perfect example, right? Like those were tough Navy teams because they were humming all the time. He knew how to run the system. He was very good at it. They knew how to run it with him. They knew what to call. They knew what he was good at. They knew what he liked and that sort of on and on and on. Right. Same thing Malcolm Perry. But when you have quarterbacks that you have two, you have a new offensive coordinator, you have a new head coach, right? So that just in and of itself is advantageous for Notre Dame, no matter when you play. But for the first game, it also matters that because it's not one of just it's not in the middle of like October or November, it's like a random game. There's no rhythm to the season that the Navy game is breaking up. You know, because going from what you've been doing and the types of offenses you've been playing to go then to the option it's like a shock. It's like, ah, like we're totally throwing away all this stuff we've been practicing. And now we're going to this. Like Notre Dame has mixed in Navy prep throughout the offseason. They've been doing it throughout camp, and then you get 2 weeks to focus on it. And not just that, but then you have the team fully bought in because it's game one. They are going to be locked into prep because they can't wait to play.
Yep.
And your attention span then is so much better than it would be if you were playing, you know, middle of November, where it's like, right, I just want to get this over with. I'm already tired. My body already hurts. You know, yep, we've already gone through a bunch of injuries then. Like, I want to get it over with. I hate this. I want to get it over with. Instead, now the attitude is can't wait to play. Can't wait to get out there. Can't wait to finally play another team in a game that counts. Right. So, like, everything about it is better and viewed in a different way. So that's why it's like Marcus Freeman says 100% better. I agree completely.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I told, you know, coworkers of mine, I was like, hey, you know what? I'm not necessarily a betting man, but I feel pretty good about Notre Dame covering the 20.5 point spread that is currently, at least that's what it was last that I looked at it, because I feel like this one's not going to be close. And if you look at some of the best performances Notre Dame has had against Navy in the last 10, 15 years, that 2012 game ranks up there. And that was first game of the season, because they just came out and they flat shut Navy down, and they executed at a really high level offensively, in that game. And I think that is what we're going to see. And if you even think back to last year's game, had a Navy have success and make that game, you know, frustratingly, stupidly close, they blitz the hell out of Notre Dame in the second half, and Notre Dame, you know, stubbornly, you know, didn't just take what was there. And you know, some of that goes back to the quarterback play, but it's like, you know, you I think we talked about it then. It's like, just take the free yards, right? You're going to send all those blitzers, just take the free yards, right? And they didn't do that last year. I feel like Sam Hartman is smart enough and savvy enough to do that on Saturday, that if Navy decides we're just going to bring in, you know, all out pressure from the start because it worked last year, Hartman's going to go, cool, dude, I'll dink and dunk my way down this field and, you know, score touchdowns every time because you're sending so much pressure. So I feel pretty good about this game. Famous last words, right? That I feel pretty good about this game. I do. I don't think it's going to be one of those frustrating Navy games that we've seen in the past. Navy's got too many moving parts this year. You know, which you already mentioned a bunch of them, with new coaching staff, not having time to, you know, to really find their rhythm and know what kind of offense they are. And I just think Notre Dame's going to come out and they're going to let Hartman just rip it, to start the year. Again, they have not been shy about putting the spotlight on him already in the offseason. And I think they're gonna want that to continue, man. I mean, this week zero, when you think about it, in a lot of ways, Notre Dame's got a great opportunity with this. There's not any other real good games. It's a pretty boring slate. Otherwise, they got
the first game of the season.
Exactly, first game of the season. Right, I saw the Dan Patrick Show headed over there today. You know, there's gonna be a lot of media over there. Like, Notre Dame's got a, you know, a nice little platform here for, you know, for week zero, and I think they make a statement.
Sure. I feel good about it too. Like, it would be very bad, in my opinion, if Marcus Freeman went through this whole offseason of like competition. You know, there's one winner and there's one effing loser and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And like fights in practice all the time. And from what we've heard, like super physical camp and all that. And then you come out and look sloppy. Like, that would be bad, right, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
It would just be a bad sign. Now, granted, like, you know, it's not the end of the world. It's not like a team has never looked sloppy to start the season to look good. But
95 Notre Dame and Lou Holtz come to mind.
Well, I mean, sure. But that 95 team, I mean,
Northwestern turned out to be pretty good.
Well, Northwestern turned out to be good. But then also, like, you know, you lost to Ohio State. And
parallels.
Yeah, that whole, that was on the road.
Yeah,
You know, it's just like that team wasn't the bee's knees by any means either. So, but I guess point taken. It's like 1995.
Yeah.
I just think like they could be fine, but it would worry me a little bit, just in terms of like, man, all that prep you did, and then to come out in game one, you weren't really ready to go. Like, that would concern me. But you also have a new offensive coordinator, right? So. Like, I have this sneaky suspicion that it's going to be like Notre Dame is going to be up like 21-0 in like the first quarter. And it's going to be like, this is awesome. Like, the Notre Dame is going to run teams. They're going to be great. And then they're going to end up winning like 34-13 or something like that. Ooh. It's going to kind of stall a little bit. And people are going to be like, huh.
It's kind of like that Temple opener. What year was that? 13.
Kind of, yeah.
Remember?
It would be kind of like that.
Tommy comes out slinging and hits those bombs. One was
to
Daniels. Were they both to Daniels? I can't remember.
He had two to Daniels, yeah.
Yeah. And then it was just like, oh, they won like 28-7 or something.
Yeah, right? They ended up like not, it was 28-6, I think.
Okay, yeah, it was like boom, 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 big touchdowns, and then like, huh. So that's what you're thinking, okay.
I just have a feeling it'll be like that. Maybe not that score, but it'll just be like, man, I thought they were going to put up 50, and now they are with like 37 or something, you know, like just kind of something like that.
Yeah. I hope not. I want fireworks. And an easy win. So, all right, let's jump to questions though. How's that sound?
Sure.
And we probably actually, I thought we had more questions than are here. No, we got multiple parters. So,
okay.
First question comes up from Chris Jenkins. Number one, Navy said they are playing two quarterbacks on Saturday. With preparing for the triple option, how prepared do you think the defense will be for that?
Yeah, like I was saying, they should be so prepared.
And you think Navy's going to throw more this year? There's some thoughts given where
I hope so. That would be great. Please do.
Well, yeah, not just against us though in general, but I mean like in general. You think they're going you think they move away from that at, like
I think they're going to run the same offense. I mean, I think in general they should throw more.
Yeah, yeah. I would agree. But yeah, to your point of not being prepared, like if they're trying to suddenly throw more, you know, it's like when Charlie Weiss tried to, you know, run the spread option or the spread offense against Georgia Tech to start 2007, like not a good venue just to try to deploy something like that. Number two question from Chris, thoughts on the uniforms for this game?
They're good. They're fine. I mean, yeah, it's like not fine. A big change.
They're
it's not a big change. It's just the sleeves, I think.
Yeah, basically.
which is like a little, you know, homage to Ireland. I think that's fine.
Yeah.
I think people, and I haven't had this confirmed or anything. I think they've had these since 2020.
That could be. Kind of like the conspiracy theory that the Notre Dame jerseys that they wore for the Wisconsin game in Soldier Field were really the ones that were spoke that they were going to wear in Lambeau that got canceled.
It's not even a conspiracy. Like, that's just like a fact.
No one's ever confirmed this.
Well, no one's confirmed it because they don't need to. But like, they literally look like the Packer uniforms. Like, you know, it's.
I don't know. They came out with a good rationale.
I have it under good authority that it is absolutely true that they were supposed to be for the Lambeau game. And the game got scrapped. But the uniforms were already made. They already made them. So they had to use them. And I think it's the same with these.
Did they have to? Like, how much could that really have set them back?
It's not that it would have set them back. It's like, why would you burn them? You just burn them.
Yeah.
Like, why would you do that? You made them, so you do it. Like, you wear it. Like, that's why I think these uniforms, I think they probably had already, produced them, and they were just waiting to be used. I mean, they had all the merch ready to go. It's like we can barely get any green stuff for the Ohio State game.
Come on, that's a whole other.
Well, but it's like, but that's what I'm saying. Like, they had everything ready to go, so I think that's what it is. I think they were just, I think they were just sitting around, which is fine. I don't have a problem with that.
I don't know. I mean, the merch is one thing though, but it's like the jerseys too. I mean, I guess there's probably some consistency, but I mean, like, from 20 to now, like, there's a lot of different players on the team, so, you know, different numbers, different sizes, you know, but I guess there's probably still efficiencies of keeping them if they were from then. But I was like, when I saw them, I was like, okay. I saw some people on Twitter like, oh, these are great, I can't wait to buy one, which was funny because you actually could buy them as soon as they were basically announced. And I was like, I don't know. If I were to buy a jersey, it wouldn't be that one. Like, I don't think it's bad, but it's like, I also am just like, yeah, okay. You know, it's fine. It's nothing great, but, you know, it's fine. You know,
you want the green one.
Yeah. Which you can now actually buy. So it took a while, but I don't know. I think they're fine. It seems at least that, like, what was the since the 18 atrocity Yankee homage jerseys, like, Under Armour has just decided, like, okay, less is more, and we're not going to go too crazy anymore, because, like, none of them since then have been really, like, that different. I actually really like the ones that they wore at Soldier Field, by the way. Those were, like, for ones that were not very different, those were some of my favorites. So all right, so there's the uniforms. Third part of Chris's questions were final stat line and score for the game. So I don't know what you mean stat line. What do you think?
I guess general trends. Yeah. Like, I think Notre Dame will have over 500 yards total offense.
I will agree with that.
And I think they are going to score like 37 points.
Okay.
I think they're going to have a lot of yards, but not
a yard, like, yard points. The Michigan
kind of, yeah.
The Michigan metric.
I think it's all going to be kind of early. Like, I think that it's almost like the BC game, because the BC game was like they had four. What was it? 37 at halftime. They end up with 44 in the game. Now, obviously, the snow played a big part of that. But I think that's what it'll be. It'll be like whatever happens, I think it'll happen like super early. And then in the last like quarter and a half, they're going to do basically nothing. That's what I think will happen.
All right. Well, I'm going to go 49-10 Notre Dame.
Okay.
I thought about 52-10, you know, just
you could get some like defensive stuff.
Also true, just like last time. Hey, 2012, the Stephon Tuitt touchdown, which was still like, I mean, that's been making the rounds on Twitter Yeah. You know, obviously that game, my God, watching that dude just fly down the field at his size was just like, that was my first indication in 2012. Like, whoa, maybe we have something with this team. Like, cause I was like, man, that's our defensive tackle. Your nose tackle flying down the field like that. Like, what could this team do? So I think it's going to be a 2012 style win where it's just a, you know, start to finish, actually. I'm going to go. And I know, like I said, famous last words. I know there could be some growing pains with Parker as OC, but it's Navy. I'm going to say we're blowing the doors off. Our next question is from your good buddy, Michael, at Michael Muto, says, can you really trust a quarterback with a beard? That's his question.
Michael Muto, my buddy.
Yeah.
My consigliere on the on the Untitled pod. Can you trust a quarterback with the beard? I mean, I guess why wouldn't you?
Right.
Like, why can't you? You know, I mean, I'm trying to think, like, who is the best quarterback who ever had a beard? I guess I can't think of one.
Dan Fouts? Yeah. Dan Fouts have a beard?
Dan Fouts had a beard. That's true. He was good.
Ryan Fitzpatrick?
I mean, obviously Fitzmagic. But then it's like, I don't know. Is he, like, good? Is that, like, a good example?
I mean, I would take, you know, if Hartman goes on to have a career like Fitzpatrick, I'm sure he wouldn't, you know. He wouldn't mind it. I mean, Baker Mayfield had a beard.
That's definitely probably true.
I would take college Baker Mayfield in a second.
Yeah, same. Although I don't think he had a beard. Did he have a beard in college?
He might not have. He does now. Andrew Luck.
Oh, there you go. I mean, you could trust him. That's to his point. You couldn't trust
Baker Mayfield. Yeah.
Well, you couldn't trust Andrew Luck. I mean, he quit.
That's true. You're tired.
I mean, but like you could trust him in college.
Also true. Also true. My boy Carson Wentz, former boy.
Don't say it.
No.
Please don't. Oh, Baker Mayfield absolutely had a beard in college. Let's go.
Yeah. If Sam Hartman is college Baker Mayfield, we're going to the playoffs.
I think Kyler Murray had a Kyler Murray.
Yes.
I mean, these are Jimmy G?
The boys. Yeah.
His boys.
All right.
You know, Lincoln Riley's guys.
Oh, there you go. So maybe.
How dare you impugn?
Maybe Caleb Williams needs to grow a beard, is what you're saying, to unlock the full Lincoln Riley factor.
I think so.
I think that is what we just determined. So, absolutely, you can trust.
I think this calls for an apology from Michael. I need to talk to him about that. He needs to apologize.
I think that needs to be on your next Untitled Pod. I think that's how you should start it off. I think that is right. This is the way. This is the way. all right, next question we have from our buddy Drew Brennan at Drew Brennan 77, who is the owner of the Exit 77 podcast. Give that a listen.
Absolutely.
He says, Harper, Carter, and Henderson, who are we going to be talking the most about by the end of the year for how well they played? I'm glad he added for how well they played, because you could have taken that question a couple of different ways if he didn't add that distinction. So between Harper, Carter, and Henderson, who are we talking about the most positively?
Well, Harper is like the starting nickel.
Yeah.
So I guess hopefully him.
It's him or Henderson. Yeah, we haven't heard a whole lot about
Carter. I'm bullish on Henderson. I think he's gonna be good. I'm happy about him right now.
I think so too.
So I think all of them. I think probably Harper though. I think people are gonna like how he plays.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen some good clips, some good battles with him in the limited, you know, practice footage that gets posted. Yeah. But we've seen some good battles with him.
I liked his physicality at Oklahoma State. I felt like he would throw his body around. I think Notre Dame fans will appreciate that.
Agreed. All right, next question we got here from Clutch Sports Notre Dame.
What have been your favorite personalities from the team to follow throughout fall camp? That's the first part.
Do you have one?
I mean, I got asked this by the Irish NFL podcast that I'm on Saturday. Outside of Audric Estime, I actually had a hard time, coming up with too many, from just like a pure personality standpoint. I did say Zeke Correll after we saw that he could chug an entire bottle of maple syrup. That's you got to be a character to be able to do that in front of a room full of people. But I mean, Estime is just like the one that it seems he's really coming into his own, which is, you think back to the video of him struggling to sing through the Notre Dame fight song from his freshman season, and to see him kind of grow into it, it's kind of fun.
Yeah. I really enjoy Jaden Mickey. Just his vibe and his overall approach to, I guess, life. I mean, his mom is going through some health problems right now. She's got cancer, and obviously we're hoping for the best there. She's tweeting a lot, so that's nice to see. So really hoping for the best outcome possible there. But he's he's got that going on. He's got a children's book that he wrote. Which is very cool, using the platform for something like that, just to think outside the box. I think it's just I appreciate that very much. And then on the field, he's just kind of he's got a lot of Shane Walton to him, He's always talking. He's always mixing it up, which is, everyone appreciates that in some way, I think. So, I would say Jaden Mickey. I like him. I root for him. I like the type of person that he is.
That's a good answer. That's a good one. All right, we'll go him and Estime as the top, top two. Clutch Sports Notre Dame also says this team seems confident and physical. How does this team compare to prior ones in that aspect?
Well, we'll have to see, right?
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it's been spoken about, it's been reported on, but we do need to see, because the other thing is there's just not as much access in terms of our own eyes. So
I'm old enough to remember way back in the year 2022 when there was some chatter that the Notre Dame team was really cool and confident and had an edge to them in fall camp in their prep for Ohio State. And we remember how that season started. Obviously the Ohio State game was fine, given it was a narrow loss to Ohio State, but then followed that up with the loss to Marshall. So way too soon, I think, to make that determination. I do think we're going to know pretty early, though. If Notre Dame comes out and struggles with the option early and lets Navy, move the ball, maybe after the first drive. I always feel like when you play a team like Navy and you're seeing the triple option, if you let up a 12 play 75 yard touchdown run on the first drive, it's like, don't freak out yet. He's got to get used to it. And then if you come out and get a 3-and-out in the second drive, it's like, okay, it's fine. You do it two drives in a row, right? Then it's like, okay, this is not good. And if something like that happens, then I'll be like, uh-oh, maybe this is not good. But if they come out and from start to finish just shut it down, I'll feel pretty damn good about where this team is at.
I agree with the first drive thing too.
It's not even the option sometimes. It's like, how many times have you seen a team, it's like, you're facing, even if it's against Ohio State, right? And you're like, takes a drive to adjust to the speed versus, other teams. It's like, okay. Yeah. And then you settle in and it's fine. So, but you do it two drives in a row and then you're like, okay, not great. So we'll see how that one goes. All right. I got two more sets of questions. First one is from our buddy Oscar at Vamos Irish says, how soon is too soon to indoctrinate your children to be Notre Dame fans? I don't think a limit exists there. I think you do it from birth.
I remember, I mean, my little guy was born in the middle of the 21 season. And I know by the bowl game, I was doing push-ups with him when Notre Dame was scoring, which was really easy then because he was so light. This year, it's going to be a little harder. No, I don't think it's too early. In fact, this morning at breakfast, I recorded a little video of my little guy saying, "Hey, you know, say go Irish." And he goes, "Go Irish." And I was like, "All right, Notre Dame." And he, "Notre Dame." He's like, "Fighting Irish." He's like, "Fighting Irish." And he just kept yelling it back to me. So I don't think there is such a thing. Do you?
So I saw this question. I was thinking about it last night. I was not indoctrinated. My dad was like a UCLA basketball fan. So if anything, he had a predilection towards UCLA.
Uh-huh.
But I chose Notre Dame, and I came up on Notre Dame on my own. Like completely organic. And I was thinking, like, I it's not like I'm not going to expose them to Notre Dame. Like, I will take them to Notre Dame games because that's something that I'm into, right? I mean, I think my dad took me to UCLA stuff as well. So it's not like he did it. I think it was different then, right? There was just not as much access to, you know, UCLA content, right? Like when they had basketball games, you could put them on, but it's not like there were, you know, shows like ours, right? Like yeah. it just wasn't a thing. So there's a lot more exposure the kids can have now.
Yeah.
But like, so they will be not indoctrinated, they'll be exposed to it, certainly. But it's like, I was wondering, like, what if my son just, or my daughter for whoever,
yeah.
is like, what if they're like my Notre Dame fandom completely is just like, it wouldn't makes no sense. Like, what if my son is just like, "Hey dad, I love Washington football."
Thank God. I thought you were going to go to the far extreme.
Well, like the
don't Huskies. Even put that in the ether. Don't even put the other in
no,
the ether.
No, but like the Huskies, like I you know, I love the purple. I love it. Or like, I don't know. Georgia or something. Like I and it, like the fact that I'm a Notre Dame guy, like I have been my whole life, and I work for Notre Dame beat now, like that is so unlikely, but it's a thing. And so like I don't want to kind of, if my son or daughter or daughters like goes in that direction, go with it. You never know where it could lead. You never know. Like, so I, as far as indoctrination, like, yeah, like do it as whenever you want. If you want to do that, do it whenever you want. There's no too soon. There's no such thing.
No, there
just
is
do
not.
It whenever you want. But for me, like I don't have a big pull to do it. I want them to, I hope, but you know, whatever happens.
All right. I am, like I said, I am indoctrinating as we speak. I will, especially because, as I've mentioned on the pod before, I have about a year here until there's a holy war in the house because my wife is an A&M alum.
Yeah.
Her entire family are very big A&M fans who are trying to pull him to the dark side of the Aggies. So I have my work cut out for me, because there will be times where I'm outnumbered in terms of, you know, the influence, so to speak. But I don't know. I feel like I like my chances. I'm going to continue, you know, making sure I do all I can that he follows in the footsteps. Although it's funny you mentioned that that your dad was not a Notre Dame fan, because neither was mine, apparently. And I didn't realize that until I was in my mid-20s when my mom was like, "Yeah, no, like you became a big Notre Dame fan, so your dad just really started watching with you." And I was like, "What the hell did you just say? Why did you guys let me do that? This seems like irresponsible of you. Notre Dame's not been good almost my whole life, guys. Like, why did you allow this to happen?" It was similar where I became the big fan as a kid for whatever reason. And then now, you know, my dad is a big fan too. And it's which is wild that it happened that way, because my earliest memories of Notre Dame football are watching with my dad.
So I always just assume like, oh, dad was a Notre Dame fan, but no, it was the opposite. So going back to the original question, there is no such thing as too soon. Indoctrinate away, Oscar, and good luck with getting the little kids to also pick up the passion for Notre Dame football. Next question from Oscar is, how much of the team do you predict has traveled internationally before this trip?
Like percentage wise?
Yeah, I guess, you know, percentage. I mean, it's probably a few because, I mean, you think about all the, you know, the international things that Notre Dame does and that you see from time to time, but it's probably not a big percentage.
I would say it's like, well, I mean, do you count Mexico?
That's international, sir.
Then I think the number's probably pretty big.
Yeah.
Because I think these guys, they go on spring breaks to like Mexico and stuff.
That could. Well, yeah, but like, well, I guess I don't even know. It's been so long since I've had to think about this. But what is the drinking age in Mexico? Is it 18?
Yeah.
Okay, so that makes sense why some of them would be. Yeah, so okay, so it could be. It could be. Let's say Europe. How many of them do you think have been to Europe before?
Like outside of North America.
Yeah, outside of North America.
I would say.
I'd say less than 20%.
I was gonna say 30%.
Yeah,
because they go like a lot of them. They also go on like trips. Like usually when they're older. So like some percentage, like I would say a good percentage of seniors has traveled abroad. I mean, it might be less now just because of COVID and that like really.
That's also true. But hell, man, I didn't step foot in Europe until I was 30 something. What year? 35? I think I was 35 when I went to Europe for the first time.
I have been out of the country one time.
Oh, and where was that to?
New Zealand.
Wow. One time, and it's like the farthest you could go. Interesting.
No, it's not the furthest, but it's.
Yeah.
It was.
Well, for me, it is actually. Yeah. For you, not so much because you can go, you can just, you know, fly west.
Yeah.
For me, that's like a, you know, that's like a 24-hour flight probably, or however long. I don't know.
It's deep.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. Now, it's funny is that like, so because of what I do and I work in sales, I had not been to Europe until I was 35. And then since then I have probably been between personal travel and work travel at least 15 times between London, Paris, Greece for honeymoon, Dublin twice, once to get engaged, got engaged in Dublin, well, outside of Dublin. And then also did my bachelor party back in Dublin, went to Spain. It was funny how it just went from like zero to all the time, like to the point I was going to London so often at one point, I did recognize like the person who does your stamp at this. She's like, oh, she's like, this stamp is mine. I remember you like from last month. I was like, yeah, I was just here, you know? So, and then now I haven't been in 4 years or yeah, 3 years, 3.5 years. So anyway, I think of that from my experience, like, well, I didn't go until I was 35. So obviously, but, it was I would say not a huge percentage. All right. Food question from Oscar, because he always gives us a food question. What are your top three Irish dishes? For an extra challenge, name one without potatoes in it.
I mean, it's corned beef.
There you go. There's one. I was thinking fish and chips, obviously, because when I went to Ireland the first time, my whole thing was I was like, I'm going to get fish and chips in every city that we go to, and I'm going to see which one has the best. And that was what I did. And it was glorious having fish and chips like 5 out of 7 days.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be hard for me. I mean, well, the corned beef sandwich, I mean, that doesn't have potatoes, obviously. I love it. Like with the rye bread.
Oh yeah,
it's gotta have rye bread. I don't like the fancy mustard with it either. I like the yellow mustard.
Okay.
With pickle, it's fantastic. It's like good stuff. So that.
I mean, there's shepherd's pie, which is obviously
shepherd's pie. I mean, anything like any pie like that. Like I have a big love.
Yeah.
Love.
like chicken pot pie, like that sort of thing, like any sort of pie like that, I'm in on that. I mean, I haven't had like a ton of Italian, because I've, you know, it's not like I've been to, I'm an Italian, Irish. Yeah. I haven't been to Ireland or anything like that.
So. I mean, the full Irish breakfast is pretty solid, but it's also very similar to the full English breakfast. But I'm gonna go with
that.
Because I do love the full Irish breakfast, especially after a hangover when you're there on your bachelor party, comes in handy. All right, last question we got. This is from Josh Emmonson, says two-parter. Pick a way too early MVP for the Irish on offense and defense, and what's your favorite jersey number? Well, we already know your defensive MVP is JD Bertrand.
Yeah.
So offensive MVP.
I picked Hartman.
Hartman. All right. Yeah, I'll go Hartman.
Going on a limb.
Yeah. Hartman. I'll go Hartman on offense as well. Defense, I'll go Ben Morrison.
Okay.
But to your point, yeah, he can just be avoided. But it's not like, you know, like it's not like Notre Dame's got a weakness at the other corner spots. So I'll say Ben Mo. What's your favorite jersey number?
So 21 in high school.
Yeah.
And so that was just, I didn't have a favorite. My freshman year, you know, they were just giving out jerseys, and I got 21. And so that was my jersey number throughout high school. And then when I got to college, 21 was taken, and so I took 26. And so I'm 21-26, Greg 21-26. That's where that comes from. Those are my two favorite jersey numbers. It really hurt my feelings when Xavier Watts moved off of 26. I felt like he should have kept it. I mean, there's some famous, you know, there's a famous safety, Sean Taylor, wore 26 in college. And then he wore 21 in the NFL. So that was good symmetry with me there. But yeah, those are my favorite numbers.
All right. I mean, I'm just going to say 25 for the Rocket.
There you go.
I can't see 25 and not think of Rocket Ishmael, which is, you know, going back to our discussion of how we became Notre Dame fans, like Rocket Ishmael is probably why I became a Notre Dame fan. Because, again, I thought it was my dad, but Rocket Ishmael is also my first memory of really getting into Notre Dame football. So it's probably because of old number 25. I love it when a really fast player comes to Notre Dame and takes number 25. Man, the Rocket was something. So yeah, I'll say 25. And that's it. That's all the questions that we have. All right. Well, we wrapped it up. No new reviews, because it's, I guess it's been a minute since our last pod, but there you go. We got, Navy game pod in the books. First one, you know, of the season. There'll be plenty more. As always, we thank you all for listening. Thank you all for your, you know, for questions. And as always, go Irish.